This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released April 3rd, 2024. Episode 664, Simulating Doors Falling Off.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
With absolutely no idea what we're going to do for today's show, as usual.
Yeah. What do you got, buddy?
I got nothing. I thought you had something. No.
I mean, I've been getting ready for Embedded World. That's next week.
I've been okay. Yep.
That's 3D in, printing Germany. Up a storm. That's right. Yeah, I'll be going to Nuremberg. And
3D printing Dave those one-off jobbies, right?
That's right.
Stand. Yep. Trade show stand. Yeah.
That's right. Yep. A lot of that. And rediscovering the horrors and joys of FreeCAD, of course.
Right. No, thanks.
Yeah.
No, I've heard the horror stories. I don't want to go there. I did try it once and I went, what the hell is this thing? No, like you can really get it. Like within 5-10 minutes, I can tell if I'm going to like a CAD package. It's not, you know, I don't have to spend long with it to realize, oh yeah, okay, this is working the way, you know, I'm getting a good spidey sense from this. And it's like FreeCAD just did not do that for me at all. So
it's a little rougher on the edges for sure. But I mean, like, I don't know, KiCad doesn't. It doesn't pop at the beginning. It's getting a lot better.
Right.
Have we talked about 8.8 since it came out? Since 8 was released?
I think we mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah, we probably mentioned it.
But I don't think you had started using it or something.
I still haven't.
Like that.
Yeah, no.
Right. Okay.
I've seen videos of it. People talk about it on the forum. That's about it.
I've just seen various things. I am
not what they call an early adopter.
used to be Mr. KiCad.
I know.
Yeah.
It used to be. Mr. Like, had free time in my life.
You were so embedded in that community. It was like...
Well, I'm still around, but yeah, I'm not
But no, you were like one of the key...
Not running any conferences these days.
No, you were running conferences and crap.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, life changes, Dave. I don't know, maybe you've noticed this in your own life, that you have a slightly different MO than
you've got kids now,
10 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, things have slightly changed, just a tad.
I did a demo on Friday of a thing that I was working on. I've been doing some Bluetooth stuff. Have you ever done Bluetooth? I guess you did with your meters, right?
Yeah, with the meter. Yeah, that was a pain in the ass. Yeah.
I don't know anything about Bluetooth. I was like, oh, well, I've used Bluetooth. But then like you start like looking at the code, and I'm like, I didn't. Do you know there's standard messages in Bluetooth?
Oh, I don't know it to that level.
Okay.
Sidekick was working on
it. Oh, right.
That.
David Tu, right?
David Tu, yes.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm sure David Tu didn't do this, but you can use standard, like, so, like, there's an HT. I don't even know if it's a protocol. It's probably the wrong name. But, like, one is, like, HT for, like, health temperature, I think.
Oh,
and so when you have a Bluetooth device that is like a thermometer, like a whatever, and is bleeping out your Bluetooth, it's like a standardized packet. Like it's like I'm guessing Bluetooth SIG, like the standards body defines it. And there's other ones too. And like, so if you go, so like my exposure to this is very, very limited, where it's basically me digging through the Zephyr demos, which is, you know, fine. That does it. Like you can kind of just see what's in there, and then those are like the well-defined ones. So like peripheral health temperature, HT. And then there's another one for like heart rate monitor. But I don't know what that one is.
Right, so they
there's
have sort
acronyms.
Of like, pre-built in for the early apps they thought that it would be used for and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think just the really common things. Yeah, right. I think and it's evolved over time too to like make some level of
They've pushed it a lot further, I think, than what they did. Don't quote me, but because I don't know.
What was your first Bluetooth device, Dave?
Oh god,
what was the first Bluetooth device you encountered?
Oh well, not me. Not that I use personally, because I was probably a late adopter, but I can remember one of my geocaching friends used to work at Microchip. He used to work at Microchip, but he was a local guy here. And, you know, when we'd meet up for, you know, we're having dinner, and he had this blue flashy thing in his ear. And I'm going, what the hell is it? Yeah. What is this blue flashing LED in your ear? I'm talking like 2000, mate. I'm probably 2002, maybe.
Really? When did, that is early.
When did Bluetooth first come out? Oh, I need to know the timeline now.
I have my reference point where the first time I encountered it, where I was very confused about what it was.
right. 1998, 7th of May 1998.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. So it would have been probably 2001, maybe, is when I first saw somebody use a Bluetooth device. And it was, he had this little earbud thing. And I think it might have even been a wireless, like, headset back then or something. And it was hooked into his new phone. I don't know what sort of, he probably had a newfangled flip phone or something, right? Because there were no smartphones back then. But I can remember that he would, it would actually beep and it would flash. It was this bright blue flashing LED in his ear.
That was the thing that got you, huh?
It's so distracting. Oh, and it was so weird at the time. Like, I did that. That would be weird now if you had a blue flashing LED in your ear, right? That'd be weird even these days, right?
I have flashing LEDs in my ear right now, Dave. My Bluetooth headset is flashing. I mean, it does,
but
like...
I've got wireless ear. I've got the Apple fruity wireless earbuds, but they don't flash. There's no LEDs on them. Like,
those don't flash anymore. Oh, my! I've
that
got
just
some
totally
sound
pisses
cores.
Away power. Why would you do
my
that?
My Soundcore LED. They have LEDs.
On the side, okay, right. Oh, I guess my big wireless headphones at home do that as well. They've got like
I think it's just to show that they're on,
seconds.
Right?
Yeah,
so they don't
it's
detect
just
if you're on.
They're on.
There's no detection if it's on your head. I think the Apple ones detect if they're like in your ear, so they turn off automatically. But if you don't have that, then you need to like be able to look at it and be like, oh, that's on.
Right.
You know?
Yep. So anyway, it was not like an in-ear one that you get these days. It was like one of those outside ear, the things that
like
clip
Jabra,
over the
like
outside.
Jabra style.
Jabra, whatever it's called. Yep.
Or Jawbone was another one.
Yeah.
Jawbone.
Something like that, yeah. So he had an early one of those. So that was my first encounter with it. But I don't recall seeing it for donkey's years after that. It was like, it was the only person I knew who actually, started
first
using
it.
I could not remember.
First time I saw anything with Bluetooth, it was when I was working at AudioPack. So it must have been I was a co-op. So it was like 2004, 2005. And they had just... They had this new product where they were putting it into like this AudioPack was like doing like safety equipment for like firefighters. And they usually had it like it was basically just like literally audio amplifiers, like on top of like old motor, like tied into Motorola radios. And so they were playing around with now they're going to be Bluetooth based instead. And they can go to a phone or to a radio, but without a wire connection. And I just remember thinking, this is the worst audio quality I've ever heard of anything in my entire life. And like, and just as context at the time, like I was downloading music, it was college days. It was early days of file sharing, whatever.
File sharing.
I was listening to like 64 kilobit per second, like just like the tinniest, crappiest stuff.
64,
like
that was still reasonably high back then, if you got 32 or something.
It was just 30. The worst stuff. It was like the worst files played through then like a phone speaker, and I'm like, I'm like listening to it. And so like this is worse than that. So just as like a reference point.
Oh god.
Oh man.
I've only recently gotten like the last year and a half gotten like the Bluetooth wireless earbud headphones. And the ones for home, apart from that, I used wired for all my music stuff before that. Yeah, I never used Bluetooth.
Play right into that audiophile community, Dave.
Right,
You got your open ear, basically just like driver cones, with a 3.5 millimeter jack in the end,
No, even back in the day
fancy
when I
tube-driven
like
preamps.
designed my own app for like workouts that used an MP3 player, so you'd actually take it to the gym, and I developed this software that actually encoded voice instructions in there. I'm sure I've talked about that before.
Mr. Fancy over there.
And I almost got a patent on
that
one.
That, man. You wouldn't be doing electronics still. You'd be on some beach sipping Mai Tais.
Nope, because this was 6 months before the iPhone came out, and then apps overtook everything. Mine was Windows-based.
Right. Was just think about the App Store before Apple did it.
And then did it. Yeah.
And you would have been
Could have patented
that
bastard.
Yeah, exactly.
Could have been rolling in the cash.
Yep.
Oh, boy. So even back then I wouldn't use a Bluetooth-y. I don't even think Maybe that. Maybe it wasn't available. I don't know when I did it. When did the iPhone come out? Bloody hell.
2007.
Oh, 2007. Okay, so even in 2007, like a good almost 9 years after Bluetooth came out, I still was not using wireless audio solution. Because that's pretty much all Bluetooth was back then. It was like wireless audio or a little...
Yeah, like the early ones.
Or smarter gadgets, like, as you said, like a health monitor strap or something, you know. But a lot of the early ones use Ant. And stuff like that. They use like Ant protocol stuff.
Right, so, I think, and then BLE came up, and like, you know, I'm talking on my butt here. I have no idea the history of this stuff. Actually, I really like Mohamed Afana's podcast videos. He's got a bunch of videos about like Bluetooth, and he has like a course about Bluetooth.
Mm.
He's the go-to for that sort of thing. I should watch more of his videos. That's. There's like a whole history there of when Bluetooth 2.0 became 4.0, BLE, all that different stuff, and like
because the denominations was a matter, point right? Where it actually went really like it became this is super low power, this is longer range, and it's this really is going mainstream, you know. I don't know what that date was, but there was like a switch over at one point.
So I let's see, I'm finally looking at the Zephyr samples here. So like, there's like peripheral is usually the node device, right? So like there's the peripheral, and then central is like the thing that's accepting all these things.
Mm.
And so there's like HR, HT, HIDS. There's a UART sample I know now. Because I mean, like your mouse is probably running Bluetooth, right? Your keyboard is probably running Bluetooth, that sort of thing.
They're running the proprietary, whatever the Logitech thing is. The little Logitech. I don't know if that actually uses their own proprietary.
Yeah,
thing
some
or
of them have standard, like their own like radio protocol on top of like just a packet radio, like a 2.4 gigahertz thing.
Mm.
Yeah, that's like the NRF24 chip that I was playing with on that CH32V003 board that I built. Like that's like one of like Nordic's earlier chips as well, where it's just basically just like straight 2.4 gigahertz packets.
Got it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyways, there's all these different messages, and you don't have to use them, because then you can also make your own thing, and that's what I think a lot of the majority of people do. So like when we talked about toothbrushes a while back, there's no like standard toothbrush message as far as I know. So they probably have like a standard GAT profile for the toothbrush, and then when I said I connected into Home Assistant knew how to listen for, like I said that there's a toothbrush. It advertised that it was a toothbrush, and it had like a database looking up that this is a toothbrush type of message, and here's how you read the data coming out.
I weep for the future.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, man, people gotta have their stuffs, you know.
No.
Gotta consume the things.
No,
you know?
Wrong. Wrong.
Anyways, Bluetooth is very useful outside of just toothbrushes
and health turns out Bluetooth Low Energy was 2010. Was Bluetooth Low Energy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because actually before that, Bluetooth was relatively, like, it was quite high power, you know.
I was like, oh, that's only a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh, my God, it's 14
years ago now is Bluetooth Low Energy. Yeah, jeez. Yeah. Man. Bluetooth Low Energy was previously known as Weebri. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know that.
Factoid of the day.
I did not know Weebri. That person reading off of Wikipedia.
Totally not for reference 93 on the Wikipedia page.
Oh, my God.
The Weebri forum merges with Bluetooth
how do you spell
SIG.
That?
It's WIBRWE. Weebri.
Oh, well, that's a better, I think Bluetooth Low Energy is a better name. So.
Yeah. Anyway, Weebri forum. Whatever, I don't know. It was like a...
Yeah, I guess probably an industry group
sort
of thing.
Right, an industry group or something. Yeah. And they merged with... merged, in quote marks.
Subsumed
they
by...
They didn't keep their name, the so yeah, it wasn't really a merger. Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. It isn't a merger if you don't keep your name.
Yeah,
let's just put it that way. Are there been any mergers in the industry this week? Well, last two weeks, probably. And we just don't care anymore, do we? So, you know.
What was the last one we talked about?
Who cares? It doesn't matter.
I guess
does it?
There, oh, no, there was the Altium.
Altium thing. It was the Altium one, was the last one we probably talked about. Yeah.
Renesas actually was going to buy a cellular module maker out of France called Sequans. I don't know if you know them.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, they were going to buy Sequans. They're smallish, so like a fabless semiconductor. They, if you remember the PyCom boards.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. PyCom is no longer.
Right.
But that was like, yeah. They had some cool things because they had like one of their claims to fame was like the FiPi, I remember, was the FiPi.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember.
It had like five radios on it because it was ESP32, so it had Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. And then it had a Sequan cellular module. And then it had a Semtech SX1276. Doing this from memory, so if I'm wrong, whatever. And so that was Laura and the other one that's just like Laura with the butterfly.
Got it.
What is it called? The French one? No?
Flora. No. Sorry.
Come on.
No. Hey, there was an acquisition. Power.
Who?
It's on our list. Synopsys to acquire Ansys.
Oh yeah, that was a while ago. That was actually I think that was in January
or something. Yeah.
Well, hold on a second here. Let me get this right. What are these things called? It's like Laura. What do I Google? Like Laura, but not Laura. People are screaming into their thing right now. French Laura. Let's see what
Laura
happens there.
Fanboys.
Google.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Nope. It's not that. Not LoRaWAN. Man, I cannot think of it. It got bought by a Taiwanese. I know everything about it. It got bought. It was put on the block, and it was their centrally controlled network operators. And it was put on the block, and a Taiwanese company bought them.
It was on the block? It was put on the block?
They went bankrupt, and they were selling assets.
Oh, I haven't heard that term before. Being put on the block, is that an American financial term?
Yeah, I think it's like the butcher block. Maybe I don't know what the block is.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I've heard that before.
Yeah, no.
There you go. There's the Americanism of the day.
Bring. I could be wrong about that too.
No.
Well, I can't remember. That was the fifth radio though. So whatever that was. Sorry, radio thing. It was like a network. It was like low power. Like Laura. And there was a sequence module on there. That's how I remember it.
All right.
So cool story, Hansel.
Moving on, I'm sure you want to talk about hybrids because you put this on the list.
Oh, well, we should talk about Ansys. We can't just gloss past Ansys.
Why not?
Although I've never used Ansys. I mean, it's like a really high-end
tool. It's a high-end,
You never used it? You have used it?
No, not personally, no. I do know others that have used it, but not.
Yeah, they do like they have like RF, and then they have like I think like Dave, my brain's not working today. What's it called?
They do finite element analysis modeling.
That's
don't
it.
They?
Yep, that's the one. That's the one I was thinking. Yep.
For like I'm talking like for airline engines and shit like that, like really high end stuff, right? It's
People
it isn't just circuit.
It.
No, it's not. Right. It's like, really high-end stuff. So any finite element analysis.
This simulation says the door is going to fall off again, Bowen. You sure you want to ship it? Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Right. And I'm sure I can spit out a checklist of things you need to do to ensure that your door doesn't fall off.
Right. Tighten down all the bolts.
Sorry, we just have to make fun of Boeing and United Airlines because it's such a meme.
Yeah. It wasn't United, was it? That was Alaskan.
Was it Alaskan? Could have been.
I think so.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I've been throwing up memes on Twitter for United Airlines. It's quite funny to keep up.
Yeah.
Keep on track with.
Oh, Ansys owns HFSS. Yeah, so that's like a big one for like RF. Yeah. I remember the RF guys at an old company I worked at. They swore by that program.
Yep.
I think it was again finite element analysis, but for field simulation and stuff like that.
Fields around PCB tracings, transmission line.
Yeah.
Yep.
This analysis is way above my.
I have to be really. Siri, yeah, no, you have to be designing the latest.
You have to know how the little bubbles are supposed to go.
you have to be designing the latest, satellites and Tesla Sky Dish or whatever it is. What's it called?
Yeah.
Something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah, fancy pantsy stuff.
Welcome to the dummy hour, where two dummies can't remember any words.
Because we've never used a $100,000 package for it.
I literally can't remember any words today, Dave. I think it's like it's 9:42. We're recording a little later than usual because you know, like, I've had a 3-year-old yelling at me all day, but like, yeah.
All right.
I do wonder if I'll ever get back into this. Like, you know, I used to simulate things. I used to simulate. You know, used to LT Spice from here and there. Not saying this is at the same level of LT Spice, but like,
right?
I don't really simulate things anymore, Dave.
Oh boy. Anyway, I can't read this bloody hybrid page because Wired. It's from Wired magazine, and they can't.
So now we're switching to cars, so people follow along.
I've got to sign in. Yeah, like I've got. I don't have a bloody Wired account to view the article. No, we need to. Archive.today. I'm going to archive this bastard for you. And then we can read it without the ads. So I don't know how you're reading that, but I can't.
This is from a while ago.
It's last archive, 5 days ago. There you go.
So it's Here Comes the Flood of Plug-in Hybrids, right? That's the one you're talking about?
Yep. That's the one.
You know, it's probably just because I'm an American. Also because I run a pie hole, maybe.
Oh, right.
Oh, no. No. Yeah.
Anyway, I just sent you the archive link so we can put that in the show notes so that people don't have to go through the paywall. They can avoid the paywall.
Take that.
Sorry,
Wired. Nast.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, anyway. I think this is interesting. You and I talked about this 2 weeks ago whenever we talked about cars, but basically just that like hybrids are probably the way to go anyways, like most
and
car makers are doing that anyways.
Let me guess, because all these countries, they've all promised we're going net zero. More than half the electric cars will be full, half the cars will be electric by 2030 or some bullshit like that.
Yeah,
and then they realize,
people
aren't buying them. Oh, this isn't going to work. Oh, they're not really saving the environment. Oh, everything else, right? Oh, lithium prices aren't coming down. Oh, but we can still meet our stated goals by having hybrids. If you put one little 18650 battery in there, you can call it electric, and then we've met our goals, right?
That's pretty cynical, Dave. That's pretty cynical.
Right, pretty cynical, you think? Overly cynical, you think? Or you think it's bang on?
Maybe. I mean, it's not probably too far off. I could imagine some car manufacturer. I'm thinking like Volkswagen.
They're all backing off at the moment. They're all backing off from their grandiose predictions.
I feel like they're all retooling, though, too. Like, I feel like they're all reevaluating retooling. I think they got spanked pretty hard during the chip shortage, too. I think that really ended up hitting a lot of planned product lines.
That hit EVs and ICE cars equally, I thought. I don't.
Maybe.
No, I think that's a red herring.
Okay. But yeah, I do think that there's less consumer appetite than they thought, right?
It's just kind of a build it and they will come, and now it's
charging infrastructure is slow to catch up too, right? Yeah. I mean, I think at least in the US,
your orders of magnitude far ahead than we are, further ahead.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I just meant the charging infrastructure of like Tesla opening up to other manufacturers. Mm. That's going to be there. I think
there has to be a
ahead.
Standardization. Otherwise, it's just going to all fall flat. It's all going to fall flat. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think some of it's just lifestyle too. I mean, you know, there's a lot of street parking in the US. So
it's a total lifestyle thing. And, and unfortunately, all these governments have promised all this shit that this was the future. And I'm a huge EV car advocate, right? Yeah. And yet I know the bullshit when I hear it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it was never, it's always going to be a lifestyle based thing, right? It's like, no, you can't make everyone drive an EV by 2030. That's complete bullshit. You know, you can't force people to use these things. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you incentivize them, right? I mean, you incentivize them with tax breaks and all that other stuff.
Well,
sure,
you
right?
can. Build up. I think there's a lot of arguments against that, but yeah, okay.
Sure. Yeah, that is a policy choice.
Which,
but I think
which means
that's
people,
one way to drive
yeah, because subsidies
adoption, right?
is people who don't or who don't have the lifestyle to pay for these expensive EV toys are the ones funding it through their tax dollars, you know?
Sure.
So that's I can't talk. Sure. I took government money. I got a free EV. I got a free EV. The government, in quote marks, paid for it. my children's future actually paid for it. But, you know, yeah, free. It was part of the COVID stimulus payouts. They gave me like 60 grand. The government gave me like 60 grand. They went, here, spend it to boost the economy. Mm-hmm. I went, okay, I'll buy an EV. Thanks.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't just the tax break. I see.
No, okay, got it. It was COVID funny money, right?
Got it. Yeah, that's fine.
And now if you're in Victoria, the government's now introducing a new land tax to pay for all the free money they gave you. Great.
Yeah.
Hi to all our listeners in Victoria, Australia.
Yeah, right.
Hope you're enjoying that. Oh boy. Anyway.
I do think there's a lot of policy difference and things like that here. But I think at the end of the day, what they're pointing at is like Toyota kind of holding back and like looking like geniuses now, right? That's like one of the things they point to.
Yeah, because
I do think one of the big switches, like Toyota, like with the Prius specifically, they held off on like the plug-in version for a very long time.
Half a decade. It was a long time.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But now I think they have a good platform there. And I think that that's going to be copied a lot over and over again.
Right.
And I think that that's the other thing too, is like now there's going to be this new, it's just going to ease people into it a little bit better.
So. Oh yeah. No, people need it. Like if hybrids didn't exist, EVs would be a niche little hobby toy thing, you know, hybrids. Yeah. It allows people to just use their normal car, yet they get some of the advantages of EV. Yeah. If you're only traveling 30 Ks a day, it's got a small enough battery that it does 30 Ks a day for you. So you can actually, can slow charge it overnight at home and, you know, like, it does ease people into it. And that's huge.
Yeah.
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 Hmm. So you're buying one? No, because you've already got a full EV.
I already got one, man. I'm not buying another car for a long time. Yeah, right. I do think the next car, probably the next, you know, we talked about it here, like the next car that we buy will be probably a large, you know, very large for Australian standards, but just a large car by US standards and, you know, something that's probably hybrid, plug-in hybrid.
Ours will be a large hybrid. Yeah. In fact, we may have to make this decision in the next couple of weeks. Did we talk about my sick car?
You and I talked about it, I think, which is
electronics related. Yeah, I can bring this back to electronics. In fact, we can talk component level here if you like.
All right.
So I've got a 2010 Hisun Dualis Plus 2. It's like a 7-seat, you know. It isn't a large, it's not considered large, but it's, you know, it's large enough for us to go on holidays with. So that's our car we go to drive on large-ish holidays where we have to pack all the kids' stuff and all the wife's stuff and me. I just take one little duffel bag and I'm right, you know. But anyway, kids and wives take a lot more stuff. So it's a space thing. It's a fairly efficient car. Right, it hasn't given us a lick of trouble in 14 years and it finally failed. The ABS system failed in it, the anti-lock braking system. And a weird fault, which the manufacturer had not, they said that they hadn't seen that before. So what it was is even if you turned the car off and took the key out, the compressor in the ABS modulator was still running. You could actually hear it, like the ABS was like on permanently. So even when you remove the key, this sucker just kept going. So
you're always safe. You're never gonna get into your wheels aren't gonna lock up.
Right,
parked on the side of the road, right?
So no, but it still drove fine, right? It still drove because people don't realize that the ABS doesn't apply brakes; it actually releases the brake. So it actually releases it. It actually releases the pressure so that you stop skidding a bit and then it turns the release off, which then applies the brake again. But the actual ABS modulator does not actually apply the brake. It has all the hydraulic feed lines going into it to your brakes and it just turns them off for a brief, you know, half a second or something so that you get that pulsing sensation in your brakes.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, that's what it really feels like.
So that's what the analog braking system does. And that's what the modulator does. So anyway, it was continuously on. So I had to actually finally, so that we could still drive the thing with, and it wouldn't drain the battery because it's like, things just continuously running, even when you take the key off. I had to rip out the 30-amp fuse for the ABS system. So for the last couple of weeks, we were driving around for 3 weeks or something.
They shoved the penny in there, huh?
Yeah, right. So we were driving around with no anti-lock or anti-skid braking system. But, of course, the car works fine. The brakes still work fine. But it just,
You only lost one kid, don't worry.
Right, that's all right. Yeah, nah, it's all good. So anyway... So I put this on the fire, did a video on the second channel, and basically everyone, most people thought that it was either a shorted out motor in it, or it was a shorted out drive transistor pair in it, or it was a shorted out relay, depending on which one it used. Like the older style used a relay to actually drive the pump motor thing. Whereas I believe mine uses a pair of MOSFETs, like a totem pole pair of MOSFETs. And apparently, one of them was shorted on. That is the best guess. I haven't had that confirmed yet, but that is the best guess that it was, one of them was shorted on. And of course, and the ABS system, I don't know how it's wired into the car, but it must bypass the switch, the key switch thing. So it must be permanently on. And so anyway, it's a failed MOSFET is the best theory, and it keeps the pump on. And the pain in the ass thing is that it's serialized. It's a serialized part. So it talks to it's programmed. Right. It's programmed and it talks to the car's computer. And so you can't just get one from the freaking wreckers and put it in. You have to have the special programmer that serializes it and reprograms it in the car computer so it reads out the serial number of a bloody pump drive thing, a motor drive thing. How evil is that?
Evil
bastards.
Lewis on the case. I feel like we maybe have talked about this now. Like I think we flashbacks.
Yeah, I think we might. Sorry for those. You got to listen to
people
it twice.
People still listening. They're like, what
anyway,
the?
I still haven't heard back.
I told
back.
You we're tired.
Anyway, I did get a quote for $1,800. To actually repair it. Apparently there's one shop in Sydney, the manufacturer, right? So I sent it back to the manufacturer, right? And I took the car back there and they confirmed that the problem was. And they said they know of one company in Sydney that will actually try to repair it. So whether or not they can repair it, because then you won't have to physically reprogram the thing, which is apparently something the manufacturer has never done or something. Presumably. So they can't even get one from the wreckers. So it's either buy a brand new one for about $5,000 or $6,000. They told me this is the manufacturer, new one for $5,000 or $6,000, or we can send it to a company that tries to repair it.
It doesn't fail very often, huh?
No. These are, they're fairly reliable things. So this is the first time they've seen one that fails when you turn the key off. So apparently it's the first one.
Yeah.
So anyway, trust my luck for that. And so anyway, if they can repair it, it's going to cost me $1,800. And it's a 14-year-old car. But we figure the car is worthless. If we try to trade it in now, it's worthless without an anti-lock braking system. So we would easily get the $1,800 back in value, in resale value. We should be able to get $1,800 back in resale value if they can fix it. So, and I think once it's fixed, I think we might, it's pretty old. We might start thinking about a hybrid.
There you go.
Whether a second-hand hybrid or whether a brand new one, I don't know. Leave it in the comments down below. Should we consider a second? Because yours is second-hand, right? Yours is
just barely.
Barely.
Yeah. 10,000 miles on it. Yeah.
10,000 miles is still a decent amount.
That's like 1 year of
one year of average
lease of miles. Yeah.
And was that like a corporate car or was it like a privately owned car?
I don't know. They don't tell you. I don't want to know.
Right.
I don't want to know.
Okay. Yeah. Right. You remember when we went on the road trip in my little Toyota Corolla?
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a secondhand one. I bought it with 18,000 Ks on the clock. Got a huge discount.
Yeah,
it was owned by the CEO of Toyota, actually, in Australia. The CEO of Toyota Australia used it as his personal, and he just commuted. And he did 18,000 Ks in 5 months or something because he actually lives somewhere up the coast or something and he just drives down every day, you know. Like it was his
I'm just thinking about the CEO of Toyota. It's like,
right,
this car used to belong to the president of the United States. The president of America and Express owners anonymous. Yes.
Oh boy.
His name was Bill.
Anyway, yeah, hybrid. Yeah, we're thinking a hybrid because we have the solar system to give us free energy. And really, and that second, like that one's our second car because we have the full EV to do all our daily driving with. So the second car doesn't get, you know, and it gets used in short little tiny trips, you know. So, yeah, so a hybrid with even the smallest battery would do just fine. Although it's got to be a plug-in hybrid. I don't understand why they ever made hybrids with that weren't plug-in. I mean, it's just like...
I think because of just logistics, if there was no chart, you know, like at the beginning, there was no charging stations available.
Yeah, but you could have plugged in a bloody into your outlet at home. You know, the batteries in those were tiny. They were like 5-10 kilowatt hours. Only a few kilowatt hours or something. It weren't much.
Yeah, like the early Prius and stuff like that.
Yeah, they were naff all.
I don't know.
Anyway, yep.
All right, enough cars.
Okay.
How about parts?
Parts?
You see the new Espresso part? It's actually...
No.
I realized I linked it in.
Because there's a new one every month. You just keep talking about a new part every month.
I know, but this one's badass. Clockwork. Yeah. This one's a dual core 400 megahertz plus a secondary RISC-V at 40 megahertz.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beast. I don't know how much it's going to cost, though. That's the thing. But it's like Wi-Fi, Thread, Bluetooth. What else is on the docket? I guess this is not a very good video.
So is this on the list? Or is this something you've pulled out?
It is on the list. I added it right at the end. But there is a YouTube video where they go over the block diagram, and that's the real jam.
Okay.
I really hate their labeling system. I think it's horrendous.
Right. What's the target market with the secondary processor in there? Is that like a low power secondary processor?
I think it's here. Let me send you a link too. I think so. It's going to have music in the background. Just for your knowledge. I think what they're going for here is this is like a targeting like vision application, so like a smart doorbell or something like that. That's probably a pretty good example here.
Right. Let me have a look.
I think that is probably one of the things.
Course it's got AI.
They all got AI.
Oh, wank. AI, of course.
Of course. And I think, but then the camera input and also display. So that's like, you know, it's not quite tablet level, right? Because it's still embedded. But I can imagine, you know, stoves and
well they're showing, you know, examples of one of those blanks. One of those, you know, Alexa microphone bloody things, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. All right.
And it's interesting because it's like this stuff is like this is starting to touch, this is kind of like the mid-tier kind of stuff, the NXP calls them crossover type of things, where it's like basically it's enough juice that it could be running Linux, but it's not Linux.
Right.
Usually it's more specific. It might be, you know, whatever.
It's got a sane amount of stuff in it. You know, it's got H.264. It's got, you know, HMI. Yeah, yeah. It's got multi camera, you know, MIPI interfaces. It's got like, this is ridiculous. It's got Ethernet, touch sensors. It's got
I3C. You're starting to see that stuff pop out. Never thought I'd see that stuff. How do we say that, Dave? I cubed? I squared C?
No,
I cubed C?
I don't like cubed. That gives me the heebie-jeebies. Okay. Sorry for any of you I squared C
fanboys.
I would say I3C. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That one's going to take a while to get used to.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It strikes me that this stuff is... You know, and it's expressive too, so it's going to be cheap, right? And so I really like to see that all this stuff is, you know, these RISC-V like secondary processors just like thrown in, because that's like the low power it's going to just be handling probably, I can imagine like a workflow where you have like a firmware team, like the low power firmware team, just handling like talking to sensors and things like right, that. And they were kind of independent of the,
you could actually have two totally independent teams because there's two different processes on here, right? There's that low power one. You could have
some
a team
bus between
just,
them, probably, right? Yeah, maybe shared memory. I'm not sure how they would do it.
You could share stuff, but that's it. But you could actually spin off a separate team just to work on that aspect. And then you wouldn't really have to cross over much as long as you shared how you transferred information between them. Then,
Right. I'm going to dump the sensor memory into this region.
Right.
And then you use your AI, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah,
on top
blah.
Of it,
you could have an AI wankery team to do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Right. Yep. Right. Right. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so it's just interesting how that this stuff is developing more. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be other manufacturers that are, you know, they're all pushing it down into the silicon now. All these like these engines, they want to have like, you know, they already have like models that you can put onto like floating point units and stuff like that, where it's just generic computing. But now they're starting to put more specialized computing down into these modules as well.
Right. So many bloody things built into it. How can there not be any issues with this? What's the errata list for this thing look like?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's like.
Yeah, I've only seen marketing stuff for it because they just released the marketing video for it today. Apparently, it was announced in January of 23. So, like, this has been 15 months.
Oh, okay.
Coming.
Right. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
All right.
Probably that must have been CES of last year.
I'm sure there's still bugs in it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that this has been an early.
Yes,
release,
if you're an early adopter just and you can't figure out why the I3C system's going a bit dodgy on you.
I don't even know how you would test it. Like,
We should
probably figure out how that works at some point, right?
Yeah, we should. But even the best manufacturers, have, you know, with the most unlimited budgets to test their silicon, still, you know, you'll find bugs. I mean, it's just, because there's so many edge cases. There's an infinite number of edge cases.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'll probably try and drop by Espresso Stand at Embedded World and see if I can.
Right.
Ask
well,
some
if we could find somebody who specializes in testing silicon, that's their. They're like, who's the best industry silicon test guru? You know, maybe we can get them on the show.
Yeah, it's interesting too because. One of my friends here in town just switched between companies, and it's not always the, like, I always kind of assumed it'd be like applications engineering sort of thing. It's like somewhere between like product engineering and product marketing, and then like the terminology is weird, like applications engineering.
Yeah,
is
sure.
One.
Not
and then
so
like,
that could mean anything. It could mean a whole gamut of stuff.
Engineers, yeah, totally. So the best ones, I don't know. Not me. I know that.
Leave it in the comments if you know who's the best of the best out there.
Or give us a shout. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Part of the week, is it?
All right. Well, I will report back once hopefully I'll get to see this thing in action in a better world. We'll see.
Cool bananas.
We will see. Yes.
Who's bit loony, and do we care that they designed an ASIC? You added
this. Yeah, BitLoonie is great. You don't follow BitLoonie's channel?
Sorry.
So BitLoonie.
No,
yeah,
I don't think I've heard of BitLoonie. Is this a channel I should be following?
Yes. He's got great videos.
What's on his channel?
So
what's his channel about?
A lot of like, you know, small electronics projects.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Subscribe. Done.
Yeah. There you go. All right. You're welcome, BitLoonie. You owe me a beer. Got Dave to subscribe. Now you'll have snarky comments in your comment section.
Well, I only subscribe with my second channel. Sorry.
No,
because that's
go.
What I'm logged in at the moment.
Yeah.
All right.
So BitLoonie, so there will be some spoilers here, I suppose, if we talk about it. But he did a bunch of the, what's it called? Tiny Tape Out. Remember Tiny Tape Out, the project?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Where they
basically
Uri had a simulator that then could compile down to Verilog, which then could be pushed into the open work tool chain workflow and then put onto a test shuttle wafer, like one of the MPW shuttle runs. And so then that was basically, they split one of the shuttle runs into even more subdivided pieces, and you could do it for like, I think it was like a couple hundred bucks. And so BitLooney did one of these, and he put most of a video file into the memory. So he basically made like a memory array. All
right.
And then when you play it back out and decode the video, it is, of course, a video of... Never gonna give you
up. God, okay.
But it like super down sampled, right?
Right,
so
yeah,
so it's like
yeah,
little
yeah.
blocks.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's fantastic. Right. And it shows the process too, right? It's
cool.
It shows that like it's very accessible.
Yeah.
Obviously, Matt, Ven, and Uri, and like everybody working on that stuff, it's like, it's actually accessible. Like, that's pretty wild, right? I mean, the fact that like you can just go and make a chip, you know, like
It's great. Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I might have. Yes, I have watched his how I made the custom ASIC. Yeah, the custom ASIC thing. Yeah, I've partially watched that video.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah. Great.
And the end of his lab. He published a video 6 months ago. The end of his lab. What? Is he being?
I don't know, Dave.
Losing his lab.
He moved. He probably moved labs. Yeah, I don't know.
Right. Right.
Dave, there goes Dave's day. He's about to go watch.
Oh,
a bunch
yeah,
of videos,
no. But, any yeah, any yeah. lab move video, I'm totally into. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. One other past guest, Pete Bevilacqua, who was an antenna engineer at like Apple and Google and like a bunch of high end places. He has a new thing where he's basically making it so you can power, you know, like how, like, outdoor cameras are all like USB powered. Did you know that? Like all the Nest cameras?
Nope.
They all expect like 5 volts
nope,
to power these.
I just don't care about those.
Security cameras. Okay. Well, that is how they work.
Right.
And like, so then you have to like have a professional installer come in and still like, if you want to like have power to these things, you have to have a professional installer basically come and route USB out to them, which is like kind of stupid, right? You should have probably 24 volts out of that security camera. Right. And so it's like this kind of, this like half measure sort of thing.
Yeah.
They are like outdoor weather rated, but like,
unbelievable.
Why would you do that? And then the other method is like, then they have these magnetic mount ones where you can like, you can basically charge it inside and then you could take it outside and like very easily like mount it.
Yeah.
Know?
But a battery powered camera is not going to last long.
Exactly. And like, it's not, it's actually better. It's better battery life than you'd think, but you still have to like go and take it down.
Yeah. You have to remember
and
to take it
like,
down. And it's, oh, God,
you
got
to like remember to do
ass.
It. And then also if you, if it, you want it to be a, like in a convenient location, then if someone wants to come and rob your house, they walk up and they grab the thing off the side of the house and they spike it. And then you don't have camera coverage anymore.
Right.
So it's like, that's stupid. So anyways, Pete got this new Kickstarter. He's got a new Kickstarter going, and basically he's passing power through. It's the power mole, and it's basically just like a couple transformer through a window, and then he's passing USB power outside. It's kind of surprising this doesn't exist already, but
right.
It's a great idea, right? I mean, like Pete's a great RF engineer, so he knows what he's doing. He's just basically just passing power through a window up to 30 centimeters. I forgot. It was.
Yeah, nice.
No, not 30 centimeters.
Yeah.
30 centimeters. Is that right? It was bigger than I thought
what,
it would
30 be. 30 centimeters. That's a heck of a thick window.
Maybe it's.
Can't you just put like
probably
a little coil on, like a wall was like, what, 15 mil thick or something, you know? If you're like.
Yeah.
You could. That's, you know, that's reasonably far apart. But if you're just talking about a piece, you're just talking about a pane of glass.
30 gone. Millimeters.
Oh, 30 millimeters. Okay. Geez. You
that
could
makes
get.
Sense.
Yeah. You could get 80% efficiency doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, that's great.
It is really just a couple transform. I mean, there's other stuff in there. You got to have like flyback, I'm sure, and drive. You got to drive the coils, whatever. But, but yeah. Then you can power something on the other side. So. Cool idea.
Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, especially if you like rent or something like that and you have to get a cable out on the other side or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. Is it just power or does it do data as well?
Just power.
Oh, okay. Right. Yep. Yeah. Oh, because the thing is wireless.
Usually wireless
right?
Then,
okay.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Got it.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, I always point people at the Pete did was – he gave a talk at the meetup I ran way back in the day about building a VNA where he had never made a PCB before. And then he's like, I'm going to build a VNA.
Oh, right.
And like
yeah,
that, That is bold. That is very, very bold.
That's pretty ballsy. Yeah, that's...
Yep. Yeah, and he got pretty far, but it's not...
All right.
I don't think it ever went commercial.
Okay.
But, yep. Yeah, looks like this is
going familiar. Commercial. Sounds like every project I've ever done. Never went commercial.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Let's get to the most upvoted post for the week, which was not from us. How about that?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. What is it?
Here we go. Most popular hobby electronics parts.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
Former guest, Jan Richter, who does Parts Box.
Oh, okay. I didn't know who posted it. Okay.
Yeah, right. It was Jan. And so he listed the most popular 10 parts. Do you have a guess before you click on it?
Any sort of part?
I think hobby part. So
yeah,
like,
any, well, we have 555, obviously, 7805 voltage reg, 741 op amp, you know, are they on the list?
I haven't looked yet, Dave. Well, I did click on the link and 555's at the top. So yes, you're right about 555. Yeah.
And you know,
78, I would put LM317 on there. Yeah,
yeah. Sure. LM317, 7805 voltage regs.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Probably like 2N2222.
Yep, something like that. Did I say
22s?
I've done a top 5 transistor video recently. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Oh, here's the list. Yeah. There you go. Number 1, 555. Number 2, 7805. I called it. And 317. Yep. And 595.
Oh,
yep.
595 shift register, of course.
Right. Yes. Yep.
1N14148. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
I'm actually looking at now is do I have this in my lab? I'm just like, oh, maybe I should be updating stuff in my lab.
I think I've only got about 5,000 41-48s. So, oh, okay. I better stock up again. Yeah.
And then
AT Mega 328, AT Tiny 85. I don't know about that.
I could see it being a popular one.
Yep.
But,
Anyway, and the 2N7000 N-channel MOSFET, yeah, that would have been on my video if I did a dedicated MOSFET video. Yeah, that would certainly be. LM324, yeah, of course. LM358, yeah, of course. So, yeah, absolutely no surprises there apart from the AT Megas, which I wouldn't have said.
Yeah, the Tinies. The Tinies are – AT Tiny is – I know some people were like – Like I remember Joe Fitz, who's been on the show a couple times before. He's like all about AT Tinies.
Yep.
And it's not for me.
Well, it's I was into AT Tinies at one point. I used the AT Tiny 26. And then I think that they like almost semi discontinued it at one point. Mm. And it was like, oh, what the hell? You know, and it was like, but I think it's back now. The AT Tiny 26, but yeah, I used to.
I can see like the dip package too is like nice for that sort of thing, but if you're doing like a custom, it did seem like it was limiting once you went off to try and like make a board then.
I can't remember why I used the AT Tiny 26 at the time. I can't, like, it had something that I needed. It had a AD converter that I needed. I don't know, it had something. I can't remember exactly. But yeah. Had one specific thing, which I think, right, you know, that's what I'm going to use it for. God, I can't even remember now. That's so late. Like, we're talking 20 years ago, more, 25 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, long time. There you go. Excellent.
Yeah.
We have. Yeah.
Thanks, Jan.
Yep.
I'll link in Jan's show as well.
Excellent. We shall do that. Is our amp hour up?
I don't know.
No, it's not. No, we've got 8 minutes left. Come on, let's stuff this turd full of full of knowledge and wit and wisdom. Come on.
Oh, man. Oh, it is April 1st today.
Did you pull
any stupid shit this year?
It's April
2nd. Sorry, it's a second for you.
What do you mean?
Yeah, it's still April 1st here.
I never pull any weird shit.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah, not you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind. Yeah, that is. I guess you usually do post it on the 31st of March for everyone else.
I don't post anything. I just post regular videos. Regular videos.
Yep.
I happen to like to certain time zones. Like, hi to all my viewers in Kiribati, by the way.
Yeah.
But no, no idea what you're talking about. So. Okay.
How about this one? I was surprised by BeagleBoard.org. They released a new board, and it is not. It's not a bone. It's not. It's in the shape of a Raspberry Pi. I was surprised by that.
Is it what? And it's got the pinout of the Pi.
Yeah, it's got a 40-pin pinout.
So they've finally relented, have they? And they've gone the Pi form factor.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the most surprising. So, like, you know, like CNX software.
That like, took a decade to happen, right?
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. I mean, okay. So Jean-Luc is like one of so CNX software is like writes about all these things and whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't think he mentioned it. That was the most surprising thing. Really? It was just like, yeah.
It
like
just, by the way, it happens to have a Raspberry 5 interface on it.
Yeah,
you know?
No one. Do I have to say it?
So is that the first Beagle product that actually has a Raspberry Pi interface?
Maybe
the
not. Hat, maybe I'm just not paying attention.
Because what is the Beagle one called? The Bone. Is it called the bone?
Yeah.
Right. It's called the bone board.
It's like the two pin. There's two rows of two pins on either side of the board. It's got the rounded, big rounded corners, whatever.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. And
no one's going to say it. Like, all right, well, I'll say it. So I think what's probably happening here is I'm just completely out of the loop and missing the fact that probably BeagleBoard has been doing other stuff like this and I just don't know.
Right.
But it's got the TI AM67, you know, beefy ass processors on there. So you know, it's all Linuxy stuff. And
it's open.
That's a good question.
It's got an open source hardware certification. It's got an official tick of approval by the...
If JSON was involved, then it's almost always, it makes sense.
It's got an official certification mark. There it is, serial number 2616. So there you go. So I guess, whereas Raspberry Pi is not open source. Can't download, you know, Jack for the Raspberry Pi.
No, their good documentation
is
getting a lot more open, but yeah. Right.
Yeah, no, you can't download a schematic. As far as I know, you still can't download a schematic for a Raspberry Pi, let alone board files or anything else. I don't even think you can get a schematic.
I don't know anymore, Dave.
Exactly. We're so out of the loop.
Oh my God.
Open source used to be a thing, you know. Now
there was a conference. There was an open source hardware summit. It just happened.
It just happened. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still going. Excellent. But we were so into that, you know, space back in the day.
Just like KiCad, Dave. Right. I used to not even say KiCad.
You used to say KiCad. Yeah.
That's right.
You're a KiCad fanboy. Right. Yeah. You find yourself slipping. Well, I do that with Via and Via, you know, because
what do you say now?
I try and standardize on Via, which is very American.
That's what I say.
Via is what we would say here, but it's like so I try and standardize, but I don't know, it slips out occasionally.
Yeah, you know what, man? Don't worry about it.
I know.
It's all cool here.
Yeah, but it bugs
Nobody's listening to us.
It still bugs me. Anyway.
Yeah. Why does it bug you?
Well, because it's like I don't know what I'm saying.
Because you're like standing out and it's like questioning yourself.
Yeah. It's like, the other thing, alligator clip, crocodile clip. Like here in Australia, I'm supposed to say crocodile clip, right? But it's an but I find myself trying to standardize on alligator clip. But even in the one video, I've used both terms, you know, and that bugs me. Hell, crocodile clips. Yep.
Is it because of Paul? Is that why you're supposed to say crocodile clip?
As in Paul Hogan.
Paul Hogan.
Right. No, it's just that's what they were called here. That's what they've always been called here. Crocodile clips. You know?
Oh man.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, crocodile clips.
So do you feel like you're not Australian enough?
Yeah, I feel like I'm not Australian enough. Yeah. Because I think they're only called that here. Like, you know,
that's great, man.
Crocodile clips. There you go. You buy them at the local hardware store. Crocodile clips.
Dave,
you know.
Say it loud. Say it proud. Crocodile clips for you.
I don't know. But it's also a hard word to say, crocodile. It's like, you know, it's kind of alligators, kind of like, you know, rolls off the tongue a bit better.
So, I've never, ever given it any thought at all.
Here you go. Alligator clips, also referred to as crocodile clips in Europe. There you go. Also.
You know what you got to do? You got to band together with your European brethren.
Right.
And take down.
We can dominate those bloody Yanks.
Stupid Yanks. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Take that, you stupid Americans.
Apparently, RS Components here in Australia, they call them crocodile clips. So there you go.
I saw a news story that there was a crocodile in Florida, which is our backwater swamp of a state.
Yep.
Hello, Florida listeners.
Right. Sure, they didn't mistake it for an
alligator. That's what I thought. I thought it was all alligators there. Yeah.
Right.
But I think they actually did have a crocodile there. I don't know if it was imported or what happened.
What? Yeah. In the wild? It didn't like escape from a zoo or someone's backyard who's like.
I think so. I don't know. Maybe it's like a tourist, you know?
Right. It's snuck on a Qantas plane. And
apparently there is an American species. Huh. I don't know.
Oh, I might have heard of that. Yeah, I think you could be right.
You know what? They can all stay the hell away from me.
Right. Ah, crocs are nothing to worry about.
Nope. They are something to worry about.
Dude, don't have to worry about a croc if their jaws are open. If their jaws are closed, you don't have to worry about it. Because you can just hold their jaws closed with your hand. They've actually opening force.
I'm not doing any. Right? I'm not doing any of that.
None of that for me. Just jump on the back and hold their jaws down, and no worries. Although if you've got one of the biggies, they might take you for for the old death roll. But you know, you got to be careful of that. Death roll's a thing where the crocodiles.
Are we back into you wanting to sound like be more Australian?
Right, Aussie. This sounds more Australian, but you can hold the jaw of a croc. Haven't you held the jaw of a croc actually closed before?
I have not.
Oh, there you go. You're missing out.
Yeah.
Valuable life experience. Anyway, yes, you only have to worry about crocs list, if their jaws are open.
The to-do list for 2014, simulate more things and try out Ansys products and hold a crocodile's
jaws closed.
Snout shut.
Yeah, because they don't have much opening force, but downward force, about, 2,000 pounds per square inch or something, Yeah, snapping super fast. Yeah, but opening, they're very weak opening. And it actually takes some time, so they can't just open it in like a split second. They, it takes time for them to open their jaws. So if their snouts are closed, no worries, you go up and pet them.
I shan't.
No. All right.
No.
All right. Sure, you don't want to come back over here and we'll go on a trip?
Yeah, I know. No.
Yeah. All right. No worries.
All right. Well, we're ending on crocodiles, I guess.
Oh, boy. We can do a great AI-themed thumbnail for some sort of crocodile with...
I'm sure it's AI gets crocodiles and alligators backwards, I'm sure.
Probably. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I think we can all agree Florida is terrible.
It's more freer than the other states, isn't it?
It's more something. It's more something.
It's more something. Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of more of a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I just heard today that house prices in Florida have gone up like 60% in a year or something.
Well, they can keep them. I'm not moving there anytime soon.
Okay, so. No worries.
All right, more electronics probably. Now, I don't know if we're going to show next week. Dave might do a show next week when I'm at the conference. Okay. I will not be recording the conference.
See what I can do.
Okay. Yeah, if not, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right, catch you next time.